time, so I will open the committee meeting for the House Health Care Committee for February 21st, 2011, and a couple of quick announcements, which will probably be happy to somebody. House Bill 2740 and House Bill 2852 are neither complete. They will not be in work sessions today. So if that is your primary interest, you get the rest of President's Day off. Unfortunately, if you're on the other two bills, you're stuck. You know,
we have to announce recurring movement.
Only if you think that we can do it on Wednesday, and Wednesday's a full agenda, and I'm not sure if we'll have all the documentation even ready by Wednesday, so it would more than likely just be a reschedule rather than a carryover.
Okay.
Everybody have that? Those bills will be rescheduled when we get the appropriate documents that we do not have at present. Okay, that leaves us. Now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2384. And Sandy, if you'd like to give us the details.
Give us a scoop.
I will give you a brief summary, Mr. Co-Chairs. Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2384 establishes the Dental Hygiene Committee in the Oregon Board of Dentistry. It directs that committee to make recommendations to the board on regulation of dental hygienists and directs that board to carry out, and directs the Board of Dentistry to carry out the recommendations except in certain circumstances. The bill also specifies the duty of the Dental Hygiene Committee. The original bill declares an emergency effective on passage. You should have either in your packet or via electronic a -1 amendment. That was brought forward by the Hygienist Association. You also should have a hand-engrossed bill with that amendment. And I believe that the sponsors of the amendment will be speaking to the amendment unless you want me to go through it. And at this point, Mr. Coaches, this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. However, it is my understanding that the amendment has a strong possibility of rescinding that, so we will look for the co-speaker's approval to have that rescinded. Yes.
We make that request in writing to them?
Yes, we do.
Okay, understanding. Okay, we have two people signed up to testify today. I think I'll call you both up at the same time. Dr. Daniel Saucy and Paul Cosgrove. If you're getting the chair first, I'll allow you to begin first.
Thank you,
please,
Chair Thompson.
Please both start with your name and where you're from for the record.
Chair Thompson, Chair Greenlake, members of the committee, Paul Cosgrove representing the Oregon Dental Hygienists Association. And I'm here in favor, testify in favor of House Bill 2384 with the -1 amendments. And in my testimony, I'll try to point out where the proposed changes in the -1 amendments go. I've had the honor of representing ODHA, the Oregon Dental Hygienists Association, for the last 10 years. And that's an organization dedicated to improving access to oral health care, and through that, achieving a reduction in oral health diseases, the cavities and gum diseases that are so prevalent in our youth and as well as in older folks of my age and older. The role of the dental hygienist in the health care delivery team is actually, I think, a pretty important one. Dental hygienists are the primary oral health care prevention specialists. They do that through education and treatment to maintain good oral health and prevent oral disease and to discover it and make sure it's treated as early as possible in the disease stage. Dental hygienists have really quite a different role in the healthcare system and an emphasis quite different than dentists. Dentists are the specialists in restorative services, which are required to prevent oral health, which are required when preventive oral health services aren't sufficiently available or accessible. So why is HB 2384 important for a better oral health of Oregonians? It's because the board licenses and regulates two very distinct professions in Oregon, dentists and dental hygienists. The board has 6 dentists, 2 dental hygienists, and 2 members of the public. There are actually more dental hygienists, about 3,700, 3,800 in Oregon now than there are dentists licensed by the board. And while we have 1 dental school in the state, which graduates about 75 students per year, we have dental hygiene programs in Portland, Gresham, Hillsboro, Albany, Corvallis, Eugene, Klamath Falls, and LeGrand, with several hundred students. So the ratio of dental hygienists compared to dentists is likely to grow, and it's important that we use them to the fullest extent of their training and ability. What 2384 does is it establishes in statute a dental hygiene committee under the Board of Dentistry. The dental hygiene committee would be smaller than the Board of Dentistry, and it would be four dental hygienists, one dentist, two public members. And that's a change that's reflected from the bill as compared to the Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment reduces the size down from 9 to 7, partly because we think it's probably functions better at a smaller level. A little bit of history would be helpful. In 2001, just after I began representation of ODHA, the board appointed the Dental Hygiene Committee, but in recent years, it has rarely met. Once in 2005, not again until once in 2008, and if my memory is correct, one or two times in 2010. Even though there have been many important issues before the Board of Dentistry during those years involving the education of and provision of services by dental hygienists, and they've been decided by the board sometimes without the careful review by the persons most knowledgeable about that profession. The dental hygiene profession is changing rapidly, and changes are necessary to meet the oral health needs of Oregonians. One example, applying sealants to children's molars and fluoride varnish to the teeth of children and our elderly, are proven treatments that reduce decay. The push for these treatments for our children and elders has come from the public health community, and dental hygienists now provide these treatments in community settings like schools and nursing homes. I know from personal experience that an active dental hygiene committee under the board would have accomplished that change in those new treatments sooner rather than later. The bill requires the board to refer all matters regarding the practice of dental hygiene to this committee. The bill provides that the recommendations of the committee regarding licensure, practice standards, enforcement, and discipline must be adopted by the board unless the recommendations are beyond the committee's jurisdiction, would put an undue financial burden on the board, or are arbitrary or capricious. And again, that's a change in terminology we're proposing in the Dash 1 amendments. These provisions are not particularly unusual. There are 16 states in which dental hygienists have this kind or similar kind of responsibility for guiding their own profession. And in the West, those 16 states include Washington, California, Montana, Nevada, Arizona, and New Mexico. The particular bill you have in front of you is actually patterned on the New Mexico statute, which has worked well and been in place for many years. The Dash 1 amendments are intended, as staff mentioned, to remove any fiscal impact from the bill. As drafted, the bill provided that the members of the Dental Hygiene Committee would receive compensation, effectively a per diem, like most people who serve on boards and commissions in the state receive. It's not a very big per diem. I think it's $125 or $130 per day of meeting. We've eliminated that per diem. And so the only expense in the bill of having a Dental Hygiene Committee would be reimbursement of expenses of committee members. And since they're already reimbursed, we think that would have zero additional fiscal impact. We urge you to adopt 2384. I'm happy to answer any questions. We would urge adoption of the Dash 1 amendments and a motion to send the bill eventually, when that time is correct in terms of all the paperwork being here, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I think we have one person for and one against on this panel. We'll go ahead and ask Mr. Cosgrove questions now, and maybe we can come back to both of them if something comes up toward the end.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to track down the bill, and except for substituting in consultation with, it now says on the recommendation of, is there anything beyond Section 3 that substantively changes the current law?
No. Chair Thompson, Chair Greenlee, no. That language is substituted in all of the areas of the statute, and it just patterns throughout the statute.
So other than that, the substance is in Section 1, 2, and 3.
Correct. You're correct.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Yes, sir. I wonder, do we approach any of the other health licensing agencies this way with a board? Because a number of our boards regulate a whole variety of, I don't know if sort of subspecialty is the right way to think about dental hygienists here, but different types of practice. And do we use this model? Obviously other states do, but do we use this in any of our other licensing
Mr. Chair, and Vice Chair Cannon. I'm not sure that we do, although this is one of the ones, one of the boards in which, let me put it this way. For example, in the medical board deals with all physicians of all kinds, DOs and MDs, and physicians' assistants. You might say that's an analogous situation. I think in some cases the physician's assistants have had some similar kinds of issues where they felt some of their issues should be dealt with in the subcommittee. But in fact, I think this is one of the few boards where two very distinct professions trained in different schools are in fact regulated by the same board. I'm not sure that that's very common in Oregon. Many of the, for example, in the Board of Pharmacy, and Chair Thompson would certainly correct me if I'm wrong, I think some of the allied professions in pharmacy are also educated in the pharmacy schools, if I'm correct.
I think not.
Think not? Well, yes. Then I stand corrected.
Just a sort of second question. A lot may turn on the definition of arbitrary and capricious. Is that a term of art? Is that a legal, is there some legal meaning there that we should understand, because ultimately what I suppose might happen is that the board of dentistry disagrees with some policy recommendation coming from its committee, and then the question becomes, was that recommendation capricious and arbitrary? What do we need to know about those
words? Or capricious and not arbitrary.
Right.
Representative Thompson, Representative Greenlee, and Representative Greenlee, you just pointed out a drafting issue. It should have said arbitrary or capricious. It says arbitrary and capricious, and we'll need to correct that. They are well-recognized terms in the law. They are the standards that the courts use for determining whether agency, board, committee, commission action is appropriate under the law. And it has both an element of determining there's sufficient evidence in the record on which the decision is based and that there's a reasonable inferences that are drawn from the record. It doesn't mean that the board could substitute its judgment for the judgment of the committee, but if the committee's judgment didn't have any basis in fact or in a healthcare policy, the board could overrule it. That's correct. And it's the reason those words were chosen in the Dash 1 amendments rather than the words in the base bill is I think they're more frequently used, more studied by the courts, and we do know what they mean. It's a well-litigated set of terms that we know what they mean. I may not have answered you exactly what arbitrary and capricious is, but it's well-known in the legal field in terms of agency review.
That's great. One final question, very quick. Do dental hygienists have representation on the Board of Dentistry?
Yes. The current Board of Dentistry is 6 dentists, 2 dental hygienists, and 2 public members. The committee would be 4 dental hygienists, 1 dentist. It's sort of a flip, a smaller committee, but it's roughly the same proportions.
There is a committee now.
And there is a dental hygiene committee. You're correct, Mr. Chair. It is not functioning very often, but it is a mix of dental hygienists and dentists as well.
Representative Doherty?
Okay. A couple of things. First of all, I know in labor law there is a definition of capricious and arbitrary, so I don't know if that's the same thing that you guys would use. But I guess my question is since there are so many dentists on this panel, that 6 dentists and 2 hygienists, could the dentists make rules over the hygienists that they really don't know anything about? Because other than when you walk in and look at my teeth, the dentist, and they actually have a real good relationship, and the dentist I go to doesn't really see what the hygienist does all the time.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Doherty, I think that's actually the crux of the issue. Hygienists are trained in hygiene schools, and I think just as hygienists may not know what happens in dental schools, although there's actually a couple of cases in which hygienists are training the dentist in dental schools, in the periodontist department at OHSU, for example. But because they have had their own schools and they have developed their own practices, I think there is at least some indication that a number of dentists, not including my colleague to the right here, may not know exactly what happens in a dental hygiene school, how people are trained, what their skills are, what their abilities are. And so that is one of the problems. That's why we wanted to have these issues go to a committee in which there were dental hygienists taking the look at it and the careful review and then back up to the board.
Just a follow-up.
Oh, please.
And so, like in the medical profession, you've got the medical board that deals with medical things. Are nurses under that, or does nurses have a separate board?
Never mind.
Mr. Chair, nurses have a separate board.
Okay.
Anyone else? I could look this up, but since you're sitting there, I'm going to ask you, on the reduction of 9 to 7, which positions are removed from the board?
There were originally, Mr. Chairman, 4 public members, and we reduced it down to 2 public members. And to be honest, one of the reasons for that reduction is a cost issue, to make sure there was no fiscal impact. But the other thing is, a public member of a board or committee, it's a great investment, and we felt having 2 would be great. Having 4 might be a reach in terms of getting people to serve.
Yeah, I think you're right. Anyone else? I guess you're up.
Thank you. My name is Dan Sosi. I'm a dentist here in at 1296 Commercial Street Southeast. Good afternoon, co-chairs Thompson and Greenlick and members of the House Health Care Committee. My name is Dan Sosi, and I'm a Salem dentist, general dentist, and the chair of the Oregon Dental Association Government Relations Council. And I'm here today to express our opposition to House Bill 2384. I would first like to start by explaining the current makeup of the Board of Dentistry to allow how well everyone's represented. The board is currently set up so that every aspect of the dental team is represented, including consumers, with 2 members of the general public. In terms of the dental team, there are 2 dedicated spots for a dental hygienist, 1 for a dental specialist, and the remaining members are general dentists geographically distributed throughout the state. And it should be noted that the last board president was a dental hygienist, and currently the vice president is a dental hygienist. This, we feel, allows for adequate representation of the entire dental team at a board level and creates a fair, well-rounded decision-making policy for creating administrative rule at the state level. In addition to the board, there are several standing committees, most of which are composed of members of the board and representatives from each of the professional associations. The Dental Hygiene Committee is in place and is set up this way, with 2 dental hygienists that sit on the board, 1 acting as chair, and a public health dentist that also sits on the board, as well as the representatives from the Oregon Dental Hygiene Association, the Oregon Dental Assisting Association, and the Oregon Dental Association. This committee meets when it's deemed necessary by its chair, which was the hygienist, to discuss problems that have arisen. They put together suggestions to represent them and present them to the board to discuss and then vote on whether to accept the recommendations or not. Some are accepted, some are not. This is how a democracy is supposed to work. Another concern we have with the bill language is the power of this committee, that the power of this committee will be given. As stated, the board shall carry out the recommendations of the committee unless the board determines that a recommendation is outside the jurisdiction of the committee, would impose undue financial burden on the board, or is not supported by the record. This would effectively eliminate carefully constructed decision-making representation on the board itself, forcing it, in essence, to rubber stamp everything that the committee decides upon without discussion or vote unless it's egregiously out of line. None of the other standing committees work this way. Our last concern is about how this will be paid for. This kind of bill will most definitely have a fiscal impact to the board. It's unclear to us where this additional money will come from, and will hygienist licensing fees be increased to cover the additional cost of the committee? Are dentist fees going to be increased for this committee? Will there be existing resources stretched to cover this? We believe the board is functioning correctly the way it's supposed to right now. There is fair representation on the board, and it ensures Oregonians receive quality dental health care from qualified dental professionals. My question is, why are we trying to change a system that isn't broken? And just to respond to my colleague here, dental sealants can be done by dental assistants now in this state, so it's not just a purvey of dental hygienist, and putting the fluoride is, so that's not really a big, and the all dentists are trained in periodontal gum disease treatment, maintaining the basement of the foundation of the house. That's what holds it. We're all in fact, I was on the board of directors of the Western Society of Perio, so we all have an intimate knowledge of, I would say that the hygienists are the ones, they're the front line, though. They're the ones that deal emotionally with the patients, and they're the ones that try to cajole them into flossing every day and you know, minor stuff like that that's really the critical. All dental care used to be elbow grease and fluoride preventable. that's, you know, dentists, we repair the problems that go wrong, and the hygienists are the front line. And I don't see anything that's wrong with our system now that would make it prevent them from doing their job. I thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions of Dr. Soucy? Dr. Dory.
When you have six dentists and two hygienists on a committee, that's kind of like really out of balance. And my question is what if the dental hygienist, the dentist part of the committee, says we want to vote on XYZ that affects their profession? Is there any way that they can stop that if all six of you want to do it?
Well, we're talking here about oral health care delivery. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, no. What I'm talking about is we've got the Board of Dentistry.
That's supposed to control,
right,
the medical aspect or the professional aspect.
Right. Well, my question is, if they totally disagree with what you guys have done, then you guys win, right?
Yes.
6-2.
But we're trained, and we know what their issue, how they're dealing with the disease. So what's the issue that we're not?
Well, I tell you what it is that I know that is your profession, and I am not a dentist and this kind of thing. But I don't know if I agree with you. And I think the reason is when you have any board that is so kind of lopsided. I'm thinking back to my own experience. I was a teacher at one time, and so we did not have much of a say in our profession for a long time, and it was not necessarily educators that were, in classroom teachers that were making the policy, and so I'm kind of wondering if this is the same kind of analogy.
This is totally different. I was on the school board here in Salem. I was a dentist, and I didn't tell teachers how to teach. Here, I'm a dentist, and I'm, guiding the oral health care of Oregonians. It's not the same.
Yeah. But still, if they disagree with you, they're outvoted.
It's my license that's on the, I'm the one that's responsible for the care of the patient's oral health care.
On your board, though, if there is something, a decision or something that's made that they may disagree with you, you can still outvote them.
Yes. Okay. But they're not, they may outvote, what the goal of the dental board is to protect Oregon's oral health. And that's the goal. And sometimes, if you vote on something, I don't think it's a problem. I don't see the rub there. I see that the hygienists are a subset of this oral health care, that the dentists who are, they're the ones that are ultimately responsible at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Cannon.
Yeah, I actually question back to Paul. I wonder if there's something I'm just missing here. What are there specific conflicts that have arisen that gave rise to this proposal? There are specific issues that dental hygienists have had vis-a-vis their treatment by the board.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Cannon. Yes, although it's a sort of a pattern. And let me, the issue that caused the creation of the Dental Hygiene Committee to be appointed by the board, the one that doesn't meet very often, was in fact a bill brought before this legislature to do something very much like this, except it was a bill to establish a different board. So this is an ongoing issue. If the Dental Hygiene Committee that was appointed by the board was in fact meeting regularly, and if the issues of concern to the profession were all being referred to the committee, and if, in fact, in some recent cases, they weren't being overruled relatively arbitrarily by another committee of the board the next night, I'm not sure we would be back here. But there have been occasions like that. But the bigger problem, I think, from a public health perspective is we have, in many cases, some of the changes that have affected the profession and that can affect positively health care, like sealants. And yes, we pushed for sealants for dental assistants as well. They've been brought by the profession, and we've not received any success at the dental board and have had come back to you every 2 years with a bill to establish that all hygienists can do sealants. All hygienists can prescribe fluoride. eventually some of these things were then implemented by the board in terms of conforming their rules to statute. But we've, generally speaking, the board has not been, in our view, terribly forward-looking in terms of trying to see where improvements can be made, and those issues have had to come back to the legislature. We believe it would be better if they were handled by the board through this kind of a committee system so that hygienists can have some actual real decision-making authority and promotion of ideas, and that they would be accepted by the board unless there was good reason not to. Now, if those are the proper grounds for the board to overrule the committee, we could talk about should there be other grounds. But nonetheless, we think that this will likely speed the advancement of the profession as a whole. Dr. Sosi said we're all part of a very important healthcare team. Oral health is part of general health, and as we look toward healthcare reform, there aren't going to be little silos over here and over there. We need to keep moving forward. There are dental hygienists now who can work in hospitals where there are no dentists. They're working with doctors and nurses. There are dental hygienists who are working in medical clinics and in nursing homes, and that's appropriate and good. But these sort of there's a dental team, and the dentist is the head, and the hygienist is below, and the assistant is below that. Those are sort of hierarchical organizations that don't really make much sense anymore.
Representative Widener?
Thank you, Chair. Actually, I'm going to direct this to you, Paul. Right now, just with liability laws and everything, let's just say a hygienist is doing work on a patient, and she applies sealant or whatever she's doing and something goes wrong, who's liable? Is it the dentist or would it be the hygienist?
It's a good question, Mr. Chair and Representative Winder. It depends on the circumstances. Many and all hygienists who practice independently are required to have malpractice insurance, so it's going to be their liability if they're practicing independently. Many hygienists who practice in a dentist's office also have professional liability insurance, and certainly if a dentist hires a hygienist, the dentist can require that that person have liability insurance. However, to be realistic, if a hygienist is performing services in a facility owned by a dentist or in a hospital or in a medical clinic, something goes wrong, everybody in the whole chain gets sued, regardless who is there. So I don't mean to say that just having insurance is necessarily going to prevent a lawsuit. We all know I'm a lawyer. Lawyers can sue and generally do, everybody in that chain. But in fact, independent practice hygienists have their own malpractice. It's a matter of the state statute that they must have it, and most people who are working just in dental offices carry it, and certainly the dentist for whom they're working can require them to carry their own malpractice insurance. Does that answer your question?
Yep.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Greenleck.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to comment on that one, though. If a hygienist is employed by a dentist, the dentist is certainly going to be liable in a malpractice. So I think that's obvious. Independent practice is a different thing, and then it's made back up. And this isn't just a matter of going all the way up to the president of the board of the hospital. This is, in fact, in an independent dental practice where a dentist hires a hygienist, the dentist is going to be responsible, I think. And that's not my question.
Well, if I could just say, most hygienists are employed as independent contractors, but yes, the dentist is going to be sued because
it's just like
a doctor in a hospital might be an employed doctor or might be somebody who has privileges. If there's malpractice that occurs there, both the hospital and the doctor get sued. So I don't disagree with you.
My question is, how many hygienists and how many dentists are licensed by the board?
3,700 hygienists and about 3,000 dentists. Two-thirds of the dentists are members of the Oregon Dental Association, and it's the members of the Hygiene Association is about 1 in 5.
1 in 5 members
of the hygienists.
May I follow?
Please.
What happened to the last bill to have a separate board? And why aren't you back with that bill? When was that bill? Or what happened?
In the 1999 session, Mr. Chairman, That was in exchange for having that discussion and having members of the legislature suggest that we should have a dental hygiene committee. That's how the current dental hygiene committee was formed. And as I say, early on, it met reasonably frequently, and more recently, reasonably infrequently. I can tell you, it's just stunning when you see the minutes of the dental hygiene committee in the meeting in 2008, and the first thing that a committee minutes always say is approve the minutes of the last meeting, and approve the last minutes of the meeting in 2005, 3 years prior to that. So that's our concern. The proposal was resulted in a committee. The committee stopped functioning very well in the last couple of years, and so that's why we're back with this proposal to establish in statute that there will be a committee and that it will function.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Representative Kennemer.
Along that line, how many hygienists practice independently?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kennemer, the last figures I think I had on limited access permit hygienists is about 125. That number is now finally growing, I think. We've developed, in the legislation you passed last session, a second pathway for people to become limited access permit hygienists. And right now, under that second pathway, every graduate of the four-year program at Pacific University is automatically eligible to apply upon graduation because they've had sufficient clinical work with those kinds of patients at time of graduation. So it's starting to grow. It was relatively stable and relatively small for years.
Dr. Sosi?
Having a license to be a limited or a permit isn't the same as actually practicing. There's a big problem with reimbursement for hygiene services, and unless they're under a physician or under a doctor's dentist thing, they're not reimbursed. And a year ago or something, there were about four in the state that were. We're having more, and we're working at it. But it's not. Having a license isn't the same as getting reimbursed and making a living on it. So, and that's a big hurdle that we still would like to overcome. But it's there are more and more, and I think there'll be more and more of a push for, you know, having dental hygiene clinics or something like smile centers or whatever you want to call them. That's good.
Further remarks, questions? With that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2384.
Thank you.
We'll move to work session then.
Mr. Chair, are you okay?
No schedule work session.
Mm-hmm.
There's no schedule work session.
Not yet. No. Okay. As I said earlier, if any of you came in late, the next two bills, 2740 and 2852, have been removed from today's schedule. They'll be rescheduled at a later time. And we will move on to opening a work session on House Bill 2967. Would you be so kind as to tell us about the amendment in the bill?
I will, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2967 had a public hearing February 4th. You'll recall the bill requires a clinical lab to provide the laboratory test results to the patient immediately upon the patient's request. During the discussions, the committee raised just some dialogue about the term immediately. So the -1 amendment deletes immediately upon and replaces it with within one working day after the patient requests the results, which...
I thought it was one working day after the results were available.
Says insert within one working day after the patient requests the results. That is different.
They still might not be ready.
That's right. Because with this bill, I would request the results immediately upon completion of the test.
And it was too.
And it may be a four-day test that they can't get back tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah, I thought we had agreed that amendment should be within one day of the results.
Right.
Completed.
Coming back to this.
Because there are tests that take
within one working day after the patient requests the completed results.
One working day after
the completed results.
Yeah. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Yeah, I think that's the right problem.
Mr. Chair, Is this work session going to be like this morning's work session?
No, I don't think so.
we don't want to go there.
we've got it under control. But, yeah. I mean, it seems to me the intention was to make it
You're absolutely
work
right.
day after it was available.
You're so. Absolutely right, yes.
This doesn't say
this is not workable because one working day after the patient requests the results can be, I got the test right now. I want these tomorrow afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not possible.
Should we send it back for refining?
Well, I think we have to because we can't do the dash one.
I think so.
Until we can't do the bill until we do the dash one. The dash one's wrong.
Yep. We need dash.
So are you okay with it saying within one working day after the patient requests the completed results?
No. It's
no.
It's within one working day after the results are available to the laboratory.
Yeah.
After the results are... Okay.
The problem is that many of these tests are based on workload and time to get the test developed for both. So if you have blood drawn today, this amendment says you can get them back tomorrow. The results may not be available for 4 days. So we want it to be once the lab gets the results back, then you can get them 24 hours after that. Is that right?
That's what I think. One working day. I think that's what
yeah.
Just
you're frowning.
No, I'm just listening.
Okay, no frowning.
That the language you have proposed would eliminate the language about requesting results and replace it with the lab has the obligation to provide it within one working day.
Paul.
Well, only if requested.
Aha.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so just, I mean, I think that's the intention, but make sure that gets into the council.
Get it in the system that the results have to physically be available before you can demand them.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're getting nowhere.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'll work with the drafter on this if you'd like.
Okay, I would appreciate that. And we will then hold off on this bill until we get it right. Is that correct?
Yeah.
No motions, no nothing. We will close. Oh, okay. Canover.
On a different topic, after we close the hearing, I'd like to talk about committee procedure for a moment, if I might.
I screwed up that bad.
No way.
Well, I just, no, let me talk about a thing that's been uncomfortable for me. In today's hearing and in the midwife's hearing, we were allowing audience participation. And I really think in these settings that's mostly inappropriate. We want to create a neutral atmosphere where people are not convincing, and like we had applause in the midwifery event. I think that is intimidating to people who are here as well as sometimes.
Can we close this work session?
Yeah.
Okay. We will now close the work session on House Bill 2967. And Representative Kennemer, you may continue.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask that, or I guess I want to request consideration of the notion that we limit audience participation with outbursts of applause and comment in hearings. I think that if we're not careful, it creates a hostile atmosphere, and we're to respect all opinions, regardless of how we may personally feel. And I think, in fairness to the audience, it's nice to just say, I understand your feeling, but we don't do those kinds of demonstrations so that we create an atmosphere where all opinions are welcome. And the hallway is a great spot to have it out about what you feel about it, but not in here. At least that's my view, and I just would feel more comfortable if we would say, I'm sorry, but we don't allow those kinds of outbursts in our hearings.
I agree with you. The only problem is that usually the outburst has already happened.
Well, of
time,
course.
But
you can,
you can remind them not to.
You can remind them that our rule ordinarily is to not have outbursts lest they be intimidating.
While we're on the subject, Mr. Co-Chair, since you seem to have been here longer than anyone else, what is the basis, or not lack thereof, for bringing audience participation into a work session like we did this morning? I mean, obviously we needed the answer to the question.
Sandy can tell you the answer to that, which is really clear. I mean, work session only gets testimony if you ask for it to be brought up.
Correct.
A public hearing, you theoretically, anybody that signs up, given time constraints, you'll hear that.
So we have to invite testimony for a work session.
Correct.
Okay.
But Representative Kennemer, I wonder whether you would draft a sentence or two that we could use
to have as a sort of standard before it looks like this, you know, when there's a hearing with people, if we would just remind people on a regular basis. You're absolutely right. Although, in truth, I didn't hear it today because I guess it wasn't.
Well, and it wasn't bad, but I just think if we're not careful, it intimidates people on controversial matters, and both in the audience and sometimes, frankly, as a member.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, this isn't a campaign. This is a public hearing, and it should show respect for all opinions.
If you could draft something that we could read to, then
I'll see what
our administrator could hand it to us each time there's a hearing, and we could.
Could we have an exception for when the crowd is standing up in accolades toward the co-chair? He likes that.
Well, you know, the co-chairs are always welcome to make exceptions of their own.
They cheer and say,
they're usually doing this to me.
If the committee members are included in those accolades.
Okay.
No.
Representative Widener.
My friendly amendment.
Actually, I want to second what Representative Kinnam is saying, because sometimes the audience doesn't know what our point of view is, because sometimes I'm asking questions. I may not be on that side, but I'm just trying to get to the bottom of what their purpose is.
Yeah.
So, and that the audience doesn't know what we're up to, but we need all the facts and the evidence before us. So
I think
it'd be worth when we have something where we have a lot of public testimony or public people coming in that we alert them that they should not be showing any emotions.
You might get a bike bill or something, and then you really watch it.
That's not funny because I sit on transportation, Representative Green.
Yeah, the one thing about this and with the outburst during the midwives, I never looked at this stuff at Hostel. I mean, they're very passionate about, and this is not only the midwifery, but on a healthcare committee, you're going to have lots of things that people are very passionate about. So, just with my opinion, it wasn't a Hostel thing at all. It was more just they were very, very passionate about what somebody had said. So I like the idea of just doing that. I'm not quite sure we can always totally cut it off, but I think a reminder of people. And it doesn't happen very often, but in other committees I've been, it's been the same thing. When you've got an emotional subject and people that are very passionate about what they feel. So that's also something we need to respect, too. Once we've said our little thing, then we can say, we told you so.
Representative Widener.
I just want to once again stress that makes it easy for us to pander to the crowd and not get to the bottom of the issue sometimes when the cheering's going, because we want to win them over, so we want to make our two cents so they love us as we walk out of here, and that's not our job. Our job is to get to the bottom of the issues, and that's why the outburst is something I think we need to let people know that, hey, we're in a hearing here, and it's only open to the people that are up speaking. So,
anyone else?
I just concur with that. Sometimes we work very hard to perfect the bill, even though we intend to vote against it, because that's part of our job, is to make sure a bill is a good bill, even when it's not the bill we want. Thank you for raising that, Representative. I appreciate that.
Well, I think it's just a fairness matter. Thank you. And I appreciate your reception.
Yeah. Any further comments, questions before we close?
You're 2 minutes ahead of me if we get out now.
I'll stall.
What about the other
my record.
Yeah.
Where was this last Friday?
And that was 10-2.
No, we were really close on Friday.
We'll try to move these to Friday if we can. Okay, with that, the February 21st, 2011 meeting of the House Committee on Healthcare is hereby adjourned.